Good morning. You're tuned into Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, traffic congestion, limited bus service, a few bike paths and a popular prairie dog colony were all reasons dozens of speakers told Boulder City Council they oppose a development proposed for Gunbarrel. This all happened at last night's City Council meeting. We'll have more coming up after headlines. Then one of the fallouts of the coronavirus pandemic is the fact that we can't go out to concerts and shows. This, of course, is having a devastating impact on venues and the thousands of people they employ here in Colorado. Well, today is a day of action to raise awareness about the impact on these venues, particularly smaller independent venues. We'll hear more later in the morning. Two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You, followed by Naturally with Brigitte Mars. Then after headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, we'll hear about decolonising through art and philosophy. It's a workshop being presented by the Boulder County Arts Alliance. We'll hear from the presenter. Then at 9 o'clock, it's Shoebox Stories, a podcast produced by Modus Theatre right here in Boulder, bringing you the stories of immigrants. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
As Congress debates the next federal aid package due to the surge of COVID-19 infections, Colorado Governor Jared Polis laid out his key demands for the new legislation. Yesterday, the governor urged Congress to deliver uninterrupted benefits for the growing ranks of people without jobs. He also wants cash support for virus testing and contact tracing, along with billions of dollars to backfill long-term losses in state and local government budgets. The Associated Press reports the governor warned of dire consequences to the economic welfare of millions of Coloradans, to the state's ability to contain the pandemic in a letter he sent to the state's congressional delegation. In reaction to a rodeo event in Weld County over the weekend, where masks and social distancing were not required, Governor Polis said people who attend large gatherings and put themselves and their families at risk, comparing it to drunk driving. He called on Coloradoans not to be stupid. Colorado Politics reports that the governor also responded to efforts by state Republican lawmakers who are calling for a special session on education. The GOP proposal suggests diverting public education dollars to parents so they could work from home and conduct in-home learning. The governor said a special session is not an option, in part because Republicans never discuss the plan with the majority Democratic Party. Health officials are conducting random testing at homes in Denver for COVID-19 antibodies. The effort is a partnership between the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Colorado and Denver Departments of Public Health and Environment. Nine News reports that people who choose to participate will be asked to answer survey questions and provide a blood sample to test for the virus. Testing teams will be identifiable by their CDC vests and badges and will never ask for social security numbers, financial information, or citizenship status. After more than a decade, Boulder's government leaders may be giving up on having a municipally managed, community-owned electric utility. But voters will still have the final say. At last night's meeting, Boulder City Council reviewed a settlement proposal with Xcel Energy. Back in 2010, Boulder voters agreed to sever the Xcel relationship in favor of a city-owned electric utility in order to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and address climate change. However, Xcel has relentlessly fought the city through the courts and recently promised to deliver 100% carbon-free electricity to customers by 2050. After spending more than $25 million in taxpayer dollars, the city now says it has come to a settlement agreement to enter into a new franchise agreement with Xcel. To seal the deal, the council would likely refer it to the November ballot at a meeting next month and would need the approval of a majority of voters. We'll have more on the Boulder City Council meeting coming up after headlines. The distrust of law enforcement by anti-police activists has been reinforced by recent events in Aurora. The alleged shooter at a protest last weekend has been arrested, but no arrest has been made of the driver of a vehicle that sped into a crowd of demonstrators. On Saturday, protesters of the killing of Elijah McClain walked on I-225 and a Jeep surged into them without hitting anyone. One protester pulled out a gun and fired, aiming at the Jeep, but instead struck two protesters. The Denver Post reports that 23-year-old Samuel Young of Wheat Ridge called Aurora police and identified himself as the person of interest in the case. He was arrested Monday night for investigation of four counts of attempted homicide. The Aurora police say they are still investigating the driver of the Jeep, whom they have identified. Protesters are hesitant to cooperate with that investigation, and some of them say the message is that the police aren't on their side and they need to protect themselves. Meanwhile, the protesters who are on the interstate are already planning new events, with one rally scheduled for Saturday in Greenwood Village. Young is scheduled to appear in court today. In more news related to the killing of McLean, yesterday the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment announced it has launched a new investigation into the circumstances surrounding his death. A spokesperson for the State Health Department confirmed in an email to the Denver Post that officials last month received new information regarding the sedative paramedics injected into McLean after police officers detained him. CDPHE has received numerous complaints about the administration of ketamine. Despite Aurora Mayor Michael Kaufman's calls to reconsider the use of the drug, it remains part of the department's adopted protocols. Both Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser and the FBI are looking into McLean's death. The city of Denver is working to identify a better location for those experiencing homelessness. A couple of weeks ago, the city announced its plans to use the parking lot outside the Denver Coliseum, but that has changed. Denver 7 reports that the proposal to place the site in the Global Elyria Swansea neighborhood has met with backlash from those who say it was not fair. Many residents of the area spoke to Denver City Council Monday night to make their voices heard. A spokesman for the city said they are now working with Councilwoman Candy Cedabaca to identify a new site in her district for a sanctioned campsite for homeless. It will be sunny today with highs in the upper 80s and afternoon thunderstorms possible. Just about the same for tomorrow, highs in the mid-80s and afternoon storms possible. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. Controversial issues often attract a packed house at Boulder's City Council meetings, but it seems a virtual meeting in the middle of a pandemic is no exception. KGNU's Ros Brown has more on a proposed housing development that many Gunbarrel residents say is a non-starter.
127 people had signed up last night to share their views on a proposed housing development that would be located on vacant land adjacent to the Celestial Seasonings Tea Factory in Gunbarrel. It would include 268 rental apartments in 12 2-to-3-story buildings on 9.5 acres. It's a lot of density for the site, but the developer had sweetened the deal by offering to make a quarter of those units permanently affordable. Angela Mishaw called it a non-starter.
Based on the applicant's proposal, many deficiencies exist, coupled with ultra-high density rezoning request with zero mixed use, plopped in our low to medium density neighborhood, which lies nowhere near a walkable transit or retail center. It's a non-starter from the get-go.
Many speakers argued that a prairie dog habitat located at the site should be preserved, while others, like Lori Branch, said now was the time to take a broader look at development in general.
If this pandemic has taught us anything, it's the need to listen to intelligent voices, to look for the facts, the need for planning, the need for putting people above greed, and preserving the things that we value.
To fight the current proposal, residents established the Gunbarrel Community Alliance and hired an attorney who argued the area may need a moratorium on development so a sub-community plan can be developed.
Today, Gunbarrel needs to assess its few remaining undeveloped properties for future community needs, including a library annex, swimming pool, rec center, playing fields, green spaces, habitat, wildlife corridors, and parks. Temporary development moratoria ensure intelligent land use decisions reflecting core community values.
At the conclusion of the public hearing, Councilman Mark Wallach pulled no punches in his criticism of the proposal, calling it grotesquely out of character with the neighborhood.
In an era when we value 15-minute walkable neighborhoods, this is the furthest thing possible from meeting that objective. To me, this project is representing a bad bargain that we're asked to accommodate, in order to obtain affordable housing.
Councilmember Mirabai Nagel echoed Wallach's concerns, saying she could not support the current proposal and would support a moratorium on development there. Most council members agreed it needed a significant overhaul, with Adam Swetlick suggesting he'd like to hear what Gun Barrel residents would approve, rather than just criticisms.
I really do appreciate all the community input on this. It's obvious that this is a fired-up community, and the residents of Gun Barrel, they put a lot into opposing this. My question is, where are we going to get those 68 units of permanently affordable housing that I think we desperately need in that area? And I would love to see the residents come out just as strongly with their proposals to find those 68 units. If not here, where? I would just love to see some alternative proposals along with all the opposition.
The developer, Coburn Partners, believes the development would help stabilize the perceived imbalance of housing and jobs in Boulder. No action was taken last night, and the concept will likely find its way back to the planning board and council in an altered form. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
One of the fallouts of the coronavirus pandemic is the fact that we can no longer go out and gather in big groups. And for summer, and really year round, that means an end to concerts or attending shows. Well, this is, of course, having a devastating impact on the venues and the thousands of people that they employ right here in Colorado. Well, today is a day of action in Colorado to raise awareness about the impact on particularly smaller independent venues of the pandemic. Christian He and Cheryl Liguori are with Z2 Entertainment. They book venues like the Boulder Theatre and the Fox Theatre and Chautauqua Auditorium in Boulder, the Aggie Theatre in Fort Collins, and in summer at Breckenridge, Riverwalk and Steamboat Springs. I spoke with them both about the Save Our Stages campaign.
They've all came to a screeching halt on March 13th, and none of the venues have been able to open for music events since.
Is there any kind of sense as to when things might reopen, given there's so much uncertainty when it comes to the pandemic? It seems that it's almost on a day to day we're getting new information. That must make it very challenging if you're trying to book events or venues or concerts months out, which would be the normal course of things for your industry.
So to give you a sense, the Fox Theater, which is a 700 capacity room under the current guidelines, could open as a 37 capacity room. Same with Fort Collins, the Boulder Theater could open as a 100 person capacity room. We don't want to open until everybody feels safe and are ready to come back. But as far as getting back to business, even close to normal, the entire industry has to come back on the road because bands have to tour. So each market really only has a handful, not a handful, but we've got local artists that we can draw from when the time comes. But really, you have to have the industry as a whole start up the touring engine. And that potentially, we're looking at hopefully later first quarter, early second quarter of 2021, with maybe a few exceptions for some other smaller capacity events. So it's going to take a while. And even if we're able to open up at full capacity at that point, that will also affect how agents and managers put their band on the road, because everybody wants to be safe. You're going in the touring world, you're going from market to market to venue, and then going home to your family, and you're all in close quarters as you're touring. So all of that has an impact on when the touring engine will get back up and running, and that will affect all of the venues across the country.
Well, Christian, that's further kind of expanded what Cheryl said there. And, I like how you said it's a touring engine, and that indicates many, many parts. It's not just the musicians themselves. There's the agents, the people who book them. There are, of course, all the personnel at the venues. too, and all these other tangential folks who were involved to create this entire industry. Christian, you know, say for the Fox here in Boulder, the Boulder Theatre as well, you know, give people a sense of the various different jobs and people who are really impacted by the closure of these venues as a result of the pandemic.
Yeah, so we have everyone from, you know, our marketing team, our managerial team, to our bartenders, our security, our production staff. A lot of people, I think, are really excited that artists have the opportunity to live stream and to make money that way. But all of our venue, like our day-to-day venue staff, don't have that opportunity. And they are stuck without an income and, you know, not knowing when they're able to come back. And I think a lot of people, while upset about the music industry coming to a halt and not having live shows, they don't realize exactly how big of an impact that makes on a lot of other people's lives as well.
Cheryl, give people a sense as well of maybe some of the seasonal nature of this, because you're dealing with venues in Breckenridge and Steamboat and Chautauqua as well. Those aren't typically year-round venues. And so if you miss that vital summer season, that's almost the whole year in terms of, you know, the concert revenue for those venues.
No, that's true. And most of the season that didn't happen this year, we're poised to roll out that season for next year. But there are still so many unknowns. Those artists that play the seasonal venues be willing to go on the road. And then when you talk about, you know, opportunities that exist to have outdoor concerts, they definitely are in a little better of a position because people have a lot of fear and rightfully so surrounded with coming indoors for their music for quite some time.
In terms of the venues themselves, you know, you all deal with a variety of different types of venues, but they're independent ones. It's quite different from some of the large auditoriums that maybe are part of a chain that could potentially weather this economic storm in a different way. Give us a sense of what the impact is specifically on those independent venues that maybe have a smaller margin when it comes to profit and how they're being impacted.
Well, the margins for the music industry are pretty slim to begin with, and different from maybe a couple decades ago. These days, artists make the lion's share of their revenue from touring, and so the costs are high and the margins are slim. So for independent venues, just to give you a little bit of an idea, as we sell tickets, we hold that money aside because that money doesn't belong to us until the show plays off, because there's always the chance that the show will cancel. Well, when you've got a lot of independent venues that have to use that kind of the ticket revenue is ongoing cash flow. And then all of a sudden the industry stops and they have to refund all of those tickets. Some venues can't weather that storm. For us, we've been in business long enough and I'm pretty conservative fiscally. Currently with the PPP loan and the cash that existed, we're weathering the storm for now. If we don't come back till next April or May, that's going to be a real challenge. We're operating with a skeletal crew. We are all on a greatly reduced salary. So we're doing, our landlords are being generous. We still have to pay some rent, but, you know, we have overhead expenses that just don't go away. And so carefully planning every spend that we make is going to be something that will last for at least 2 to 3 years. And we're currently working on other funding sources to get us through to next year, because you still have to have funds available to restart your business.
Well, Christian, what is happening on Wednesday and what are you calling for?
So Wednesday is our Colorado Day of Action for NEVA Colorado members. NEVA is the National Independent Venue Association. So out of all of the 2,000 members of NEVA, we have many Colorado venues here that make up about 2,800 employees and staff members. And we are just trying to get the word out for all Coloradans to call upon their representatives to pass the Save Our Stages Act and the Restart Act, which are two bills that would allow independent venues gain access to federal funding. And as Cheryl mentioned, this is a touring machine that needs cogs to function correctly across all cities in order for artists to start touring again. So there are, every state has their own precinct and they're each doing their own day of action. And we, you know, if Coloradans have friends in other states, we really implore them to also call upon their representatives to pass these bills as well.
That's Christian He. We also heard from Cheryl Liguori, and they're both with Z2 Entertainment. They book venues like the Boulder Theatre, the Fox Theatre here in Boulder, and the Aggie Theatre in Fort Collins. Now, to find out more about the two pieces of legislation we discussed there and this whole Save Our Stages movement, you can go to the website saveourstages.com. That's saveourstages.com. It's time now for Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Senate Republicans unveiled their stimulus package proposal, the HEALS Act, Health Economic Assistance Liability Protection and Schools Act, Monday. This is a $1 trillion stimulus package versus the HEROES Act, which House Democrats passed as a $3 trillion plan last May. Republicans and Democrats both propose a $1,200 stimulus check to the same people who got it in round one. Democrats want a $1,200 second stimulus check also for dependents, compared to $500 under the Republican proposal. Republicans propose to cut enhanced weekly unemployment benefits based on a 70% wage replacement to about $200 a week. Democrats want to see the $600 a week payments continue. Tax provisions will help Americans get back to work, according to Republicans. Republicans would expand opportunity tax credits and others to get people back to work. Republicans would also increase the employee retention tax credit. Democrats argue that 40 million Americans have filed for unemployment. Senate Republicans did not mention any extension of student loan relief. Democrats want to extend student loan relief through September 30th of 2021. Republicans want strong liability protections for business, but Democrats, liability protection is not a major priority. Republicans proposed to extend the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP. A small business with 300 or fewer employees could receive a second forgivable PPP loan if revenue has declined 50% or more. To help the restaurant industry, individuals could deduct 100% of business meals, up from 50% in the Republican plan. Republicans proposed $105 billion to open schools. The Democrats have introduced the $300 billion Coronavirus Child Care and Education Relief Act. Republicans proposed $25 billion for coronavirus testing and contact tracing. Democrats want $3 trillion total in financial stimulus. Republicans are trying to limit spending to close to $1 trillion. Bernie Sanders says the Republican plan is $29 billion for the Pentagon, 100% deductions for three martini lunches, and zero for hazard pay, nutrition assistance, the uninsured, the Postal Service, or state and local governments. Trump wants $2 trillion for this stimulus, twice what his fellow Republicans want. Trump also wants extra FBI funding. Representatives are expected to delay summer recess to get a bill finalized. Congress must finalize legislation soon, or the new stimulus could be delayed until after Labor Day. If you have thoughts on the competing bills between House Democrats and Senate Republicans, you can contact your senators and representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
You can hear Make Them Hear You every Wednesday morning. Up next, it's Naturally.
Hello, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars to talk about some of my favorite herbs. Cayenne pepper is a member of the Solanaceae, or nightshade family. The Latin name for cayenne is capsicum, and there are many, many species. And cayenne is actually measured in heat units. It can be anywhere from zero heat units to something mild like paprika. And there's some cayennes that might be measured as hot as 100,000 heat units, like habanero peppers. The genus name capsicum derives from the Greek capto, meaning to bite, in reference to the spicy flavor. And the common name cayenne is actually taken from that of a French Guiana town in the same name in the northeast coast of South America. So cayenne, yes, we know it's hot, but it also does many things. It's the fruit of the plant that's used, and it is considered blood purifying. It's antiparasitic. It is an antioxidant, very antiseptic, including being antiviral. It is a diaphoretic, meaning it makes you sweat. I think a lot of people are familiar with that. It's an expectorant. It can help stop bleeding, especially when it's applied topically. And I know that sounds scary, but I've used it quite successfully that way. It also is thermogenic, meaning it increases body circulation and can help burn fat. We know that cayenne stimulates the brain to secrete endorphins, and it improves circulation by keeping the blood from clumping together. So that's an interesting dichotomy. It can stop bleeding when applied topically, but internally, it improves circulation. We also know that cayenne can help relieve pain, not only because it stimulates endorphin production, but it also helps to block the transmission of a substance called substance P, which is a neuropeptide that transports pain messages to the brain. We also know that cayenne helps to open the nasal passages. And of course, I've often wondered, why do people eat so much cayenne in really hot climates? And that's because by making you sweat, it actually helps you to feel cooler, and thus the air seems less oppressive. So hopefully you'll enjoy the hot blast that a bit of cayenne gives you. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.